This will actually be probably a little less scientific and a little more, thanks would be the word. The Mason Bee technology transfer, starting from Torsio all the way through the Logan Bee Lab, MSU, UC Davis, there's a lot of cool people working on a lot of neat things, passing their knowledge on to people like me, a commercial company. Beyond that, though, the reason I'm really here is we're chasing the calorie curve. The human population between now and 2050 needs a lot more food. And I believe by using the right bee on the right crop, you get more food. It's kind of simple. A Mason bee, I'm not really going to go deep into what a Mason bee is. I'm going to say there's 130 plus species of twig nesting bees across North America. This is too bad. I uploaded something on Saturday morning to get a better slide, so I'm out of order. Mason bees, at least the spring cavity nesting bees, need three things. They have to have pollen, they have to have holes of the correct size, and they got to have good clayey mud. No pollen, the bees are going to nest someplace else. If there aren't the right size holes, they're going to go someplace else. And we're pretty confident now that we've got it dialed in that if there isn't good, moist, clayey mud, they're going to disappear. So what is that mud? And we're going to say not all mud is useful. We've been looking at what's in the soil, whether it's sandy, loamy something, or solid clay, but what you're grabbing out of the ground versus what you find inside that hole, it's phenomenally different. The bees are mining out just the right substrate that they need. It's got to be sticky, so the moisture content has to be perfect. And what we're finding that in an orchard, people look out there and just see it's all flat. It's not easy in the morning to be getting mud from a very dense, dewy substrate or surface. And in the afternoon when it's dry, the bees are having a tough time trying to get that dirt out there because it's dried up. So they're typically going to a wall. And we're actually thinking through, we've been putting our own muds into fields. This is a simple little capillary action. We're finding in orchards through like the Columbia Basin where you've got sandy fields out along the lake beds where these are all artificial orchards, you've got just sandy environments, and to get the Mason bee to fly in there, you have to bring in imported mud. But a lot of these farmers, and at least in the spring side, don't have their irrigation systems turned on. So the farmers are going through with tractors just trying to put water into these holes. And this little simple box here, it'll probably fall apart as you go around. This is just a prototype we've put together. Capillary action of getting something from the water up across to mud within 3 or 4 hours, we're able to get brick hard clay moist. This is going to help us put bees into orchards. So Mason bees, what makes them so good? You guys and your peers across the world have been studying these for a while. Torsio is a great example. Jim Kane, Teresa Pitzinger, I mean, there's a lot of people that have been touching us. Thank you. But they've been showing, that these bees are phenomenal pollinators. So kind of why is this? This is the down and dirty of it. A honeybee, as she's going between her, the pollinizer, or wherever she's at in the field, first of all, a honeybee goes from the source where the pollen is back to the hive and typically back to the source. And she knows both places really well. She's keeping the pollen sticky on her hind legs. Okay? So not a lot of pollen is falling off. You'll need in an acre up in Washington, we're using maybe 30,000, one hive per acre. Down in Stockton, they're putting like 5 hives per acre. That's a lot of bees trying to get to a lot of pollen. The Mason bee is a little different. They know where they've started, and they're kind of ADD. They're bouncing around between all these little trees, going back to their house, but they're gathering the pollen loosely on their abdomen. So that pollen is falling off everywhere. You're looking at the difference between the two. The honey-making bee is an awesome honey-making bee. Okay, it's really good at gathering the pollen and not letting it fall off. The Mason bee is really inefficient, and that difference, with that pollen falling off on all these trees as they're going around, we think it's a lot different or a lot better. And in particular, when you're looking at an orchard where you need cross-pollination, every third row, every third tree is a pollinizer. We're starting to put the boxes next to the pollinizer where the mason bee might start off there and on her circuit then gather that pollen and be moving it along. We find it, and we'd like to know exactly why, but the mason bees, Lignaria and corner fronds that we're used to, are working in more windier environments and colder environments. So why? Possibly that you've only got 6 weeks to live before you're dead, and it's make eggs and mate and do it or not. And I think a honeybee, we just tend to find them, they wait a little longer before they come out in the day. It's a little windier, they'll hang tight. But we're in 20-mile-an-hour winds up on ridges. We're down inside the valleys, and we're finding that the bees will fly. Another fact, I'm going to say monoculture in orchards is synchronous with the honeybee. If you didn't have the honeybee, you wouldn't have food in the middle of your orchards. Okay. In the normal conventional orchards, if you haven't killed everything around you on the periphery, you're going to have possibly your ground nesters might come in from the perimeter and go in about 150 feet. When you're in your monoculture crops, you've got thousands of acres or hundreds of acres of apples or cherries or whatever. You might find some bumblebees in there, but you're not finding a lot of the native species being able to penetrate into the orchards. So if you could bring in an outside bee, it's a manageable bee, so we're bringing in holes, and we've got these holes just uniformly placed, the farmer now is able to achieve pollination. We're seeing, I'm going to say the mason bee is phenomenal in all crops, but we've been clearly seeing in almonds, you're getting, is Derek here at all? Derek Arts? I don't know if this paper has been still published. You're getting potentially 20 to 30% extra almonds. In cherries, you're getting, by science, you're able to get 2 to 3 times the yield. We just had a farmer we're introducing mason bees into California, Oregon, and Washington. And one of the farmers in Omak, Washington, achieved 6 extra tons of cherries per acre. Okay, in his 9 acres, he got $100,000 this year. He paid about $6,000 for his bees. Okay, now that's on extreme. We had some farmers, but they really couldn't tell because they're working with their packing plants. A lot of farmers were able to get about 1,000 extra pounds per acre. So it's moving forward. Not all crops are there. I think apples aren't necessarily as important with the mason bees, but we have bees in kiwis, pears, cherries, almonds. We're moving forward. Some programs out there, you know, why am I even here? There's a lot of neat programs that are in place. Under Rufus Isaac, Project ICP, if you haven't heard about it, it's a multi-year program that's some of the results, one of the alternative bees that might make sense, the mason bee, Osmia lignaria, or corner fronds, in almonds, apples, and cherries. That'll be released in a couple of years, and we're trying to, or the final results will come out in a couple of years, and we're looking to get a lot of notoriety out of that. There's, as I said, there's a lot of studies on corner fronds, bicornis, Europe and the U.S., Japan. A lot of studies showing that these bees do well. About 5 or 6 years ago, in fact, Corey is the president of Orchard Bee Association. It's a wonderful example of science and commercial people working side by side to develop standards of pollination, standards of development, shipping standards, commercial purchasing standards. We've been analyzing the honey, the leaf cutter, and the bumblebee industries, and then creating an industry on mason bees off those, what would make best sense to get this to the farmers wisely. There's a lot of things we're still missing. As we said, mason bees are now, in this technology transfer, you're seeing bees go into orchards. We were probably able to hit 250 acres only. This next year we might be able to get to 600 or 700 acres. I got a lot of bees being raised in backyards. This is one of my fun roles as a company. Most people think there's only 5 bees in the world. Honey, bumble, all hornets, all wasps, and everything else. Okay? And so to try to help people realize that there is a sixth bee, it's called a mason bee. Later on, we're going to introduce a seventh bee. It might be the ground nesting bee. But we're helping these people out there. And actually, one of the things we do, we've got 12,000 followers in bee mail. Once a month, we just say, hey, do this. Okay? And real open statement. Out of these 12,000 people that are all by email, if any of you want to touch, you know, a citizen science project, reach out to me. We'll help you with that database. We'll introduce you to the people. So you've got a lot of people raising a bee, you know, across full spectrum of the U.S. And Canada. So what am I doing? What's our plan? We're trying to, again, we're chasing that calorie curve. We're getting bees actually raised in the urban rural settings. So we're asking a lot of people to be raising bees for us. Through that bee mail, these guys are more successful. They've got extra cocoons that we're actually buying back. We're giving people, it's called bee buyback. We're giving people free tubes or reeds or houses or certificates, whatever you want, in exchange for your cocoons. Those cocoons are then being sold back to new gardeners in the same area. So we're trying to keep the Wisconsin bees in Wisconsin. We're trying to keep, you know, Washington, Oregon bees in our same areas just for pathogens and diseases. We're also pushing those into nurseries around there to sell more customers. And then ultimately, if we get enough bees, then they're moving into orchards. So the West Coast has more of Lignaria. We're able to put West Coast bees out there into the local orchards. So we're going to wait a while until we get enough bees of Wisconsin or bees of New York to be able to get, you know, those bees in the right areas. We think with the right bee, teaching the farmer how to do it correctly, we should see enough food or more food to help our pollination, or help the population. We're going to be touching North America first. We'll be then touching our food for the winter, South America next, hitting Europe, Australia, and then China. I mean, it'll be our company. It's a small little company. We'll be bigger at some point. Right today, we're focusing just on the money. My money is mostly in the commercial and the wholesale sides, getting out to the gardeners. Later on, it'll be the orchard environments. And you know, welcome to the world of entrepreneurship. I'm in my eighth year. This is the first year I'll be profitable. You know, it's not an easy one to go out there and do this. There are a lot of challenges. Again, you know, awareness. It is, the media knows of those five bees. Your orchard manager might maybe know of a sixth one, but there's not a lot of awareness. And so to teach the people that there is a sixth bee is, I think, important. We're trying to teach standards when it's tough to New Hampshire and New Mexico at the same time. It's a different environment. How do you teach the same lore or the same step at different times when your weather's all out of whack with the environments? It's just a challenge. We don't have enough blue orchard bees or Japanese orchard bees, Lignaria or corner fronds, to augment the 1.6 million acres of peaches and cherries and apricots and plums and apples, etc. We think we'd need about 1.6 billion mason bees. So between my peers and I, we have about 3 million. So we're just a few decimal points away. We can get there. It's going to be a long, long road, but you know, it's going to take a while to get there. It's not just about the two mason bees, corner fronds and Lignaria. We really would love to have other cavity nesting bees just because you can move them around. A couple of years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, I was talking with a professor out in the Northeast who had 10,000 pumila, whatever experiments, you know, studies she's working on. I called a couple of years later, what have you done with those? And we'd love to take those and see if we can move them to the Northeast, have backyard gardeners raise pumila. She let them all go. Not a big deal, but, you know, we're just trying to introduce more bees if we could to the gardeners and then ultimately to the farmers. This is an interesting one. We're putting bees into two different sides, backyard gardens and orchards. So a peer of mine, this past spring, he had, I'm going to say, identical situations. You had two same cherry varieties, 20 minutes apart, so same weather topography, same soil. We brought in our little clay that you've got around. So we had imported clay, so same, 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 same everything. First place, the mason bees did, okay, farmer was happy. Second place, the farmer was just pissed off. Zero bees nested. We put 10,000 out there. No bees nested. Jim gets back into the car and calls me up, hey, Dave, you know, tells me what's going on. And he goes, and plus, I stink. I said, well, what do you smell like? He goes, I just smell like chemicals. Well, what did the guy spray? He didn't spray anything, he said. Well, go find out. So Jim walks back there, finds the farmer again, still mad. And he said, you said I couldn't spray, so I don't spray. Jim said, well, you know, there's no one spraying around here right now, but my clothes just stink. He goes, well, I'm surrounded by apple fields, and they're spraying all the time. Okay. Now go into Upper State New York. A policeman up there has been raising mason bees steadily from, 10 up to 1,000 in a year. And I give bees to a backyard. I've got a lot of people raising bees for me in the Northwest. And so every year I give you a couple hundred, and I get back 400 or 500. So two seasons ago, the guy in New York actually got back none that season. But he'd been progressively over 5 or 6 years, been doing well. My backyard gardener around me in Woodinville, 500, 400 back. 1 year, I got back 10. Next year, 500. So what's going on? Well, both the backyard gardeners had been putting down true green. I think that's the word from, or chemon used to be called. So my supposition, I don't know, a honeybee and a bumblebee have to fly through a toxic waste, environment to their hive. They are chained to that thing. A mason bee, I'm not loyal to anything. I can just move away. I don't know. Certainly would be interesting to find out. I would love to see more and more research. If the right bee gets more food, we need more research on the right bee. Most of the money goes towards the honey-making bee. Not saying it's wrong, just an observation. Some thoughts. What type of mud would be best? You just saw red ball number 500. It's just pottery soil, bentonite. Is that the right soil? It'd be great to have. I was working with Randy a couple years ago on an SBIR grant that wasn't funded, just trying to figure out what type of mud this bee can use. No mud, no bee. It'd be interesting to find out in your orchards, what's the bloom count? I've got a speleated apple something or chair something that has 1,000 trees per acre versus a 20 by 20 grid of mature cherry trees. How many bees do I put on that crop, or strawberries or peaches or whatever? Just because my bees are limited, it'd be nice to know whether I need to put down 500 cocoons, 200 or so females, or do I need 1,500? So just to have that study would be something interesting to see. This is a real interesting one. A peer of ours in the UK has been there for 5 or 6 years doing only honeybee and only mason bees under polytunnels on cherries and apples. And the first 2 or 3 years we heard him coming back, he said that in the only mason bees, they were seeing more cherries, bigger cherries, less rot on the tree, less dropping of the fruit on the ground. It took about a week longer for the trees to mature. The skin was more elastic, and he's able to get 3 to 4 weeks of extra shelf life. That's phenomenal to a cherry. So now actually this past year, he says, well, I'm a little off. He says, I think, same. I think we're seeing 7 to 8 weeks of extra shelf life to a cherry. Okay. Now when you're looking at apples, great all the way along, no bitter pit, the brown spots inside there, and 4 months extra shelf life to an apple. Okay, so the question could be, the question is, well, what's going on? He could be lying. could be lying. There is that thought. I don't think so. Claire Britton finished a paper a couple years ago under Neil that suggested, or Proust finished out, concluded, thank you, is that when you have wind-pollinated almond versus honeybee-pollinated almond, the physiology of the almond was different. So what if we put more grains of the right pollinizer onto the correct fruit? I don't know. But my peer, Chris Whittles out of the UK, is started with Harper Adams on this past year. They're moving forward. It would be great to team with Neil, your group, or whoever to come alongside them and try out some U.S. crops with this. This would be phenomenal to your cherry and your apple industries. What diseases? We know that we can see some of the visible pests, pollen mites, parasitic wasps, chalkroot. But is there a deformed wing virus? What else is being passed from honeybee to mason bee? We have no idea. There's not a lot of money put into this. And we think through loose cocoon management, if a bee's died inside the cocoon and we've now harvested everything, so we just have a pile of cocoons, maybe we're bypassing the diseases that were inside that progeny. Don't know. This is a little scary to me. I don't want to have, I don't want to shut down an industry like the leaf cutters almost did a few years ago with chalkroot. Chemicals. I don't know what's going on. It'd be interesting to find out if smell is a factor. And even for the point of if a mason bee is out there picking up mud laced with whatever and putting it back to the back of a twig, is that larva in there as it's consuming the pollen, then licking that mud, what could be happening there? I don't know. It just certainly would be interesting to understand. I'm comfortable. We now talked with our peers in Switzerland and the UK. They spray a heck of a lot less than we do. Well, it could just be we've got a lot of money being thrown at the farmers marketing-wise, and thou shalt spray because that's the easiest answer. It would be interesting if we could relax the spraying regimes in some of our fields to allow different bees to work. Our mission, kind of simple, crown bees, we're just trying to increase the food supply through using the right bee on the right crop. We're trying to target 1 billion mason bees. It's going to take a few years. We're just using the backyard gardeners to get that going. We'll be hiring people, if we can, into the fields of the wild forest when we get enough money to be able to afford these people to try to get as many bees as we can. My company has to be ethical. We cannot cut any corners. When you guys tell us something different, we change what we're doing. It really, really is important to me. I want to make sure that we're using mason bees wisely. Disease and pest control, while relatively fresh and new, as we get bigger and in more fields, we've got to do this as wise as we can. You guys will help us on that. I want to teach absolutely correct practices. What you people tell us in reports and papers, we want to turn into gardenese, turn into farmerese, and pass that back out there. A complaint, okay? I've got Teresa Pitzinger as my, it's not a complaint, she gives me papers. Occasionally I'll find cool little papers from her, and that's about the source. And Corey, I don't know where you are, as president of OBA, we need every paper that you guys have taken your time on, all of your years of study, in front of commercial people. And I don't know, you guys put them wherever you put them, but it doesn't get to us. And so one of my complaints is that, help me get those, whatever you've studied, let me read them, let me translate them, and get them out to the people that are raising the bees. We're always trying to improve products. So my little mud box there, that'll probably be it, Crown Bees Mud Box. We're trying to do what we can to increase the amount of bees that are there. And then lastly, our purpose is to, or our path to success is to partner with you guys. If we are out of sync with the researchers, then we're going to lose our way. It's pretty simple. Thanks. Any questions?
Dave, we have quite a bit of time for questions, so.
Yes, sir. Getting back to the mud, so, there's a lot of drop mud balls right at this beginning entrance of the nest, in any sort, no matter where I've had my bees. Have you ever looked at that in relationship to the soil type that they're bringing back?
So your question, have I analyzed when bees are dropping, whether they're dropping leaf bits, because I'm a leaf cutter and they just fell off, or I'm dropping mud bits that have fallen off? Have we analyzed that? My suggestion on this, we have looked at it a little bit. My suggestion is the moisture content might not have been good enough for the bees. They had more dry and it's kind of fallen off. Because as they're packing, if it's really moist, it'll seat there. So on the outside mud plug, it would seat there nicely, I think. Or they just got clumsy. Maybe the hole was the wrong size. It was trying to get in. It's just falling off. It would be either one of that. Good question. Yes, behind. No, that's a wonderful pest to the honeybee. We've got a pollen mite. Really, is kind of it eats pollen. I've never really seen any life sucking insect on my bees. So, no. Yes, Corey?
With that little mud container.
The mud box. Yeah, TM, you know.
What did you call it?
Mud box. Oh. I'm being facetious, yes. Have we put this mud box in orchards yet? That is a 3-week-old experiment, you know.
Well,
so
I'm just curious if they're able to home in on it, if it's got the visual cues and such that they need to recognize it for what it is.
So the question might be, how do bees find mud? And I spoke with Jim Kane a few years ago, you know, can bees smell moisture? And Jim's statement to me was, yes. You know, how do the bees find Are they copycats? So did one find it and they're all now seeing bees are down inside there? Does it have to be distanced away? I once went out and put a bucket of perfect mud right underneath the mason bees, and it was at a 45-degree angle, and it was the perfect moisture, everything. And I have thousands of bees overhead using it. Not one bee touched it. So I went out and found dead mason bees. I kind of put them inside there, seeing if they'd use it. Not one mason bee used it. And I think possibly it was too close. I don't know. You know, why would you want to have the mud source right next to your holes? If there's a bird or something, they might maybe be too close. I don't know. Or that mud wasn't optimal. But it would be great to think that one through. I think in an orchard where I don't have anything else and I've got the right moisture content in there and it's visible, might be a white-gallon bucket. We don't, you know, a 5-gallon bucket. We don't know yet. But I think that's going to be our answer, because the farmers, it's so hard for a farmer to constantly go around and keep the ground wet, and so we're cheating by having this thing should last 2 or 3 weeks.
You have time for one
more. Well, then the next experiment would be, which kind of soil do you need, what kind of clay, because
absolutely,
although you can get bentonite from a well driller supplier, we also have other type of expandable clay that hold moisture, so it may be that you have different kinds of clays, whether it's a montmorillonite, bentonite, vermiculite, which is a natural vermiculite. You can try a different variety. And they probably all taste different, too, to the bee, because they have different charges on the edge of the clays.
Help me run an experiment. That'd be awesome.
Calcium.
Yeah. So if you guys want to reach out to me, I am dave@crownbees.com. I would love to listen, to touch, to work with you on anything. Thanks. Appreciate
it. Thanks again, Dave.